Good afternoon, everyone. You're very welcome to our, if you're watching online, we had a little bit of a technical hitch, so it's lovely to welcome those who are watching online. And it's lovely to be speaking to the rest of you who are here in person about Advent. I did joke with everyone on the desk that I'm preaching on peace this morning, and as a father of a three-year-old, I don't really remember what the concept is like. Is he okay there? Yeah, great. Okay, cool. So if we haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name is Scott. I'm a chaplain in UCD and in TU Dublin, and I'm also a curate here in the parish where I lead our Thursday night gatherings, which is kind of aimed at young adults called Vespers. And this morning we're beginning our journey into Advent, which the word Advent comes from the Latin word Adventus, which means coming. And throughout Christian history, there are kind of three ways in which Christ comes into the world: in flesh 2,000 years ago in Jesus in the past, in our hearts every day in the present, and then this eventual return that we're looking forward to, the second coming of Christ that happens in the future. And during this season of Advent, we reflect on and identify with this ancient longing of the people of God for the Messiah to come into the world, and on our own longing for God's presence in the midst of the pain that we see in our world at the moment, for his light to burst in the midst of darkness. Advent is a season of waiting and preparing ourselves to celebrate Christmas, not jumping ahead, as is the tendency as soon as Halloween. Are you two looking for our son? Yeah. Has anyone seen our child? He's gone into the long room. Okay, great. Excellent. I'm so glad that was captured on the live stream. This is a very family-friendly church. We have no hesitation about kids running around. There is a tendency in our world where it's so easy to fast forward from one thing to the other, to want to jump straight from the kind of, you know, we see it so often in the shops that as soon as the Halloween decorations come down, we immediately fast forward into Christmas. But Advent is a deliberate pause, a conscious choice that we make as Christians and as a church and as a tradition, to not leap to the joy that is to come, but to sit in the presence of the moment in which we're in, to remember that Christ came and Christ will come again, that when he does, he will make all things new, he will bring redemption and restoration, he will wipe every tear from every eye and bring an end to mourning, death, and pain. But until then, we live in the not yet. We live between the promise and its fulfillment. And in that space, we seek to be his people who are living lives that are shaped by his life as he taught us what it means to be human, and as people who are made in the image of the God who is love. So to help us navigate Advent, the church has developed a wonderful set of traditions and rituals that guide us and anchor us in these moments. And one of them is what we did earlier, the lighting of our Advent wreath. And the circle of this wreath is like a symbol of God's eternity and endlessness, of his grace and love that have always been and always will be. And the greenness of the leaf, it speaks to the hope that we have in God, who has no seasons, no moments where he hibernates, sheds, or withers, but is always full of the fullness of life. And each candle that we light is a reminder that Jesus is the light of the world and that we are called to be lights in the world in which we live. And different churches have different traditions or take different approaches every year. And that's what we're doing this year as we journey through Advent, lighting candles representing peace, love, hope, and joy. And today we're going to begin that journey with the word peace. I should have been pressing buttons. Tell me, how would you define the word peace? This one isn't rhetorical. Silence? Okay, yeah. The absence of war, the absence of conflict. Yeah, those are the two that stuck with me. And if you look at the dictionary definition, it's freedom from disturbance. But oftentimes when we try to nail down what peace is, we speak of an absence of something, that something is missing. But there's always a danger to kind of do that with different types of words. Like it would be a sad thing if you said to someone, the definition of happiness is the absence of sadness. Well, hold on. It's a bit more than that. I mean, that's true. Happiness can be the absence of sadness, though happiness and sadness can coexist in the complexity of human emotion. But also beyond that, happiness is a thing on its own. It's not just defined by the absence of something else. If that was the definition of happiness, it'd be terrible to turn to the one that you love and say, "You make me not sad."
Love is a thing in and of itself. It's not just the absence of hate. Our wedding vows don't include, and our relationship will have an absence of hate until death do us part. The word is more than what is absent. Peace means something. One of the dangers of this is shallow understandings of deep words do not equip us to embody them. One example I think of that is when we have a cheap or a shallow definition of holiness, we will sometimes define it as the absence of sin. And all of us will either have experienced or know about a kind of stereotype of that holiness is simply the absence of doing the wrong things. But that's a faith or a holiness that is defined by what it isn't rather than what it is. It isn't something that's beautiful or compelling. It's something that's ruled by fear about where it doesn't go rather than what it causes you to do. It's about fear rather than passion or inspiration. It doesn't set the world on fire. It kind of puts the world to sleep. Holiness is a thing in and of itself, something that means something more than the absence of sin. And the same is true of peace. It is more than the absence of conflict. And in Hebrew we find, or in Greek and Hebrew, we find these two different words. Those are the opposite way around. Apologies. Shalom is don't let that go on the live stream. Things live forever on the internet. Shalom is the Hebrew word for peace, and Irene is the Greek word for peace. I was just doing this just to check who's listening. And these words, let me quote Tim Mackey on this from the Bible Project. In the Bible, the word peace can refer to the absence of conflict, but it also points to the presence of something better in its place. The most basic meaning of shalom is complete or whole. The word can refer to a stone that has a perfect, whole shape with no cracks. It can also refer to a completed stone wall with no gaps or missing bricks. Shalom refers to something that is complex with lots of pieces that is in a state of completeness or wholeness. It is more than what is missing. It is about the presence of what is and about the presence of what should be. The presence of what was made to be there. So with that building, developing sense of what this word peace means in the Hebrew context, when we jump into Isaiah chapter 9 and we read, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined. You have multiplied the nation. You have increased its joy. They rejoice before you as with joy at the harvest, as people exult when dividing plunder. For the yoke of their burden and the bar across their shoulders, the rod of the oppressor, you have broken as on the day of Midian. For all the boots of the trampling warriors and all the garments rolled in blood shall be burned as fuel for the fire. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests on his shoulders. And he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, of Shalom. His authority shall grow continually, and there should be endless peace for the throne of David and his kingdom. He will establish and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time onwards and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. The biblical concept of peace is about so much more than the absence of conflict, which is good because it also means that the promise of peace is about more than the end of wars. It's about what will happen in the aftermath. We might say it like this. It's not just about making it stop. It's about making it right. And the world is crying out to be put to rights. Not just for violence to stop, but for healing to start. Not just for an end to destruction, but for the beginning of recreation. Shalom is something our world is crying out for. In the conflicts that are in the news that we know of across the world. I was really struck this morning by the words of Dr. Munter Isaac, who is a Palestinian Lutheran pastor and principal of Bethlehem Bible College. And this Advent, as they're journeying towards Christmas, they, at the front of their church, have placed their baby Jesus in rubble as a sign that in the midst of their experience, God is in the rubble. And God is always in the rubble, but God also doesn't leave us in the rubble. He leads us towards the rebuilding, towards the fullness of peace, not just the end of what shouldn't be, but the beginning of what was always meant to be, of what God has always longed for. On a global scale, we long not just for an end to conflict and violence, but for what has been destroyed to be rebuilt. And on an individual level, we long for the peace that comes in the midst of our anxiety, our fear, or our heartbreak. Tragically, I think that the reason that peace is so profoundly relevant today is that we live in a world where peace is bad for business. This is one of the things that we explore in our world with, or in our work with students, and the messages that they're bombarded with day in and day out. Two particular messages are handed, I think, to all people in society, but I think this is particularly true of university students. In order to keep them spending, competing, fighting, striving, whatever. To keep them moving and participating in a system that seeks to exploit them. And those two messages are, you do not have enough, and you are not enough. By convincing people of the scarcity of creation rather than the abundance of our Creator, our attention becomes focused on what we do not have. It makes us feel a need to spend, to consume, to get more and have more. And in doing so, we lose the peace of learning to have enough. And we contribute to systems that make other people suffer poverty or exploitation and injustice. And by convincing people that they are not enough, the voices of our world stop them from being able to rest, to be present, to experience the peace of knowing that they are loved, they are loved, they are loved. Instead, they end up trying to fight, strive, and prove themselves in order to earn something that they already have, a love that sets us free. The peace of the world says you can be at peace when you have enough and you are enough, when you own enough, when you've earned enough and worked hard enough to pause, stop, and just be. But Jesus says, peace, I leave with you, peace, I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not let them be afraid. When the Prince of Peace comes, he sets us free. He allows our hearts to rest. He teaches us to trust in his abundance and in his enoughness. And he invites us to know and to believe our belovedness. Tell me, what type of peace do you need this Advent? You can name it in your heart. There is something I assume most of us are thinking about. There is some way in which we need peace, the shalom of God, to become manifest in us. Not just in the breaking of the cycle or the stopping of something, but the peace of God that is the rebuilding, the reforming, the reshaping, the redeeming, the restoring power of the peace of God that brings things back to life. The power of restoration and of resurrection. And in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus also says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. We're not just called to experience peace or to be people who experience peace, but to be people who embody it. People who live out God's shalom in a world that is crying out for peace. Tim Mackey puts it like this. To bring shalom literally means to make complete or to restore. True peace requires taking what is broken and restoring it to wholeness, whether it is in our lives, our relationships, or our world. This Advent, in the space of the waiting, in the space between the promise made and the promise fulfilled, what is the peace that you need and the peace that you seek? And what is the peace that you are invited to make in the world in which you live? What does shalom look like in your relationships? Your relationship with those you love. Your relationship with those you struggle to love, including perhaps yourself. Your relationship with God. What does it look like in our community? For us to be people who make complete the lives of those who live around us. What does it look like to be peacemakers. People who experience the peace of God. Let us pray. Jesus, you are the Prince of Peace. And as we light candles symbolizing peace in a world that can often feel so dark, we ask that by the power of your Spirit, you would be moving it in us right now to understand, to know, and to experience your shalom. Your peace that does not just stop what shouldn't be, but that brings about what should be. That does not just end brokenness, but brings wholeness. You are the Prince of Peace. You say your peace you leave with us. You do not give with condition or with limit, but you seek to pour it out, inviting us to be a people of peace who experience the peace that comes from you and embody it to a world that craves it. Help us to find your peace in this moment and as your people.